On a podcast, every 11 seconds is an every 65 seconds is an Someone mispronounces a word every 25 seconds. A controversial joke is cut every 24 minutes. And there are 250 Simpsons references a show.
No, I love the fact that you mispronounce.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Adam and Craig's guilty pleasure. Adam and Craig's guilty pleasure. Adam and Craig's guilty pleasure. Cinema.
So, Craig, have you ever seen Cobra, the 1986 Sylvester Stallone R-rated movie?
Despite this being my choice, I have not.
Yeah, I know. It's a bit of a strange one. How come you suggested it?
Well, it's one of those things, and this is, I think, one of the biggest joys I get of this podcast is... I get to watch films that are on my list of like, oh, I should watch that one day.
Yeah.
And that I never got to. Films that kind of suck.
Yeah.
But also are kind of awesome at the same time because...
Yeah.
And so my knowledge of Cobra, when I was growing up, I had the Tango and Cash DVD. Video cassette.
The old VHS.
And the old VHS. And before it, they didn't have trailers. They had like a compilation coming up from MGM. Or
right, yeah,
it was.
Yeah.
And it was to the tune of Eye of the Tiger, and it had clips from like Rocky 3 maybe, and some such nonsense. But I remember there's the line from Cobra, the only thing I know about it, which is, this is where the law stops and I start. And I've always just been like, huh, I should watch Cobra. Now the reason I haven't is because my dad was like, nah, that film sucks.
Your dad was onto something. I'm a, obviously, you know that I'm a massive Sylvester Stallone fan. I'm a massive fanboy.
Yeah.
But this movie has so many issues with it, obviously, which we'll crack into on the episode. But for the listener, if you've not seen Cobra before, it's about a tough-on-crime street cop who must protect the only surviving witness to a strange and murderous cult with far-reaching plans. Bum, bum, bum. Roll trailer.
Society is breeding a new kind of criminal. It's also breeding a new kind of cop. Meet Cobra. He does the job nobody wants.
Did you use unnecessary deadly force?
I used everything I had.
Do you know you have an attitude problem?
Yeah, but it's just a little one. You think you would recognize me if you saw him again?
The tall one?
Yeah. The one that wants to kill you.
Do what you have to do to get a lead on this maniac.
And if I find him?
Do what you do best.
Stallone is Cobra, the strong arm of the law.
So obviously you're not a fan, because you've never even seen this movie.
I have not.
But do you know who is a fan of Cobra?
Sylvester Stallone. Which, just as a side note, have you ever watched Fairly Odd Parents?
Yes.
Yeah, one of my favourite bits in that, or my repeated favourite bits in that, are where the kind of Stallone and Schwarzenegger rip-offs come into it, and it's Sylvester Calzone.
Ah, okay.
And
every
time we say Sylvester Stallone, I hear in the back of my head, it's Sylvester Calzone! And that's just a great gag. The other one's Arnold Schwarzenegger German, and that's not as good.
Yeah, I mean, those guys are really easy to caricature. Obviously, McBain is the one that always think to head if I think of an Arnold Schwarzenegger kind of rip-off.
You mean from The Simpsons?
Yes.
Well, that leads us very nicely to our Simpsons trivia game, Adam.
Ah, yes, yeah, that's the segue.
Look
dab,
at
dab,
that.
Dab. Yeah, I have that plan.
I believe the scores are... Well, I'll look at the editing for what the scores are, because I've forgotten, but... Yeah. Up
the,
for a
the points
point
are made
week.
Up and the scores don't matter.
Yeah. Whose podcast is it anyway? The question this week, Adam, sir, is which is the only character in The Simpsons to be drawn with five fingers on their hand?
So obviously this isn't when the Simpsons family transforms into their pink skin versions.
No. And it's not when, like, Homer, in that one random bit of one of the ends of the Treehouse of Horrors, turns up in the real world. No. As in, like, life as we know it, not the TV show The Real World. Oh, that would be something.
I do know what this is. It's God.
It is, in fact, God.
Yeah, dab, 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 dab.
One extra point to Adam, which brings our score to Mr. Black. So, yes, who loves this film other than Sylvester Calzone?
Well, it would be, I think, one of your boys, Nicholas sort of Winding Refn.
Oh, he is one of my boys. I love Winding Refn.
I know you like a bit of Refn.
The man's only put one foot wrong in his life.
Which was...
I really didn't like Valhalla Rising. I just didn't.
I don't think anyone did.
It was a lot of art house imagery and not enough people being beheaded. And it started with people being beheaded, and I was like, cool, I'm in. And then an hour and a half of my life went by. But the rest of it is gold.
Yeah, so speaking of gold, the movie Drive, the 2011 movie starring, what's his face, Ryan Gosling.
Yeah.
You know how he's pretty cool?
He is pretty cool.
And he has a toothpick in his mouth.
He does.
And that's apparently meant to be the homage to Cobra, because Cobra has a matchstick in his mouth.
Nice.
He's pretty cool as well.
It would have been nicer if he had, like, because he's got the scorpion jacket.
He does have a scorpion cat. This is very Cobra Kai.
It's very Cobra Kai, but it would have been nicer if it was a cobra. I think there's like a metaphor about the scorpion ink drive. I've not seen it for a few months. But, great filmmaker. There is a filmmaker. Who was it? I watched a film recently, and this is such an odd tangent, I might not keep it in. But essentially, it was like a piece of trash film that turned out to be Terrence Malick's favourite film.
Oh, right, okay.
And it's one of those things like... Oh, why does this art house director love this cheesy piece of 80s crap? Doesn't matter. Anyway,
I always feel that sometimes people will say like random shit movies just because to try and be different, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, you can imagine like a Quentin Tarantino-esque type person. It's like, oh yeah, so I like this fucking movie from the fucking 60s that no one's ever fucking heard of. And that's my favourite movie. And it's just like, is it? It's like...
Yeah, like if your favourite film is Rocky, get out of here.
Oh, fuck off,
it was
man.
Deep
Rocky's
Blue Sea.
Fucking legit.
Sorry. I've just checked it out. It was previous episode, I think. Deep Blue Sea.
Mm-hmm.
Have we done Deep Blue Sea?
Yeah, we have. We've definitely done Deep Blue Sea.
We've done so many at this
point. We've done quite a few now.
But yeah, that's one of Terrence Malick's favourite films.
Fair enough.
Yeah, that's not like an edgy, oh, look how cool I am. That's just a choice.
That is a choice. Craig, director George P. Cosmatos. Yep. Where do you know that name from?
Pass.
Oh, okay. So he's done some notable work. He's the director of Rambo 2. So he's worked with Sylvester Stallone as well, again. Yeah. And he did Tombstone.
The
good one.
The good one, yeah. Not Wyatt Earp, the other one.
Yeah. Quite a notable director, but you wouldn't know that because when Sylvester Stallone was on set, he was pretty much directing most of the film. So Stallone really like mapped out and just kind of like took over. I'd almost say, what was this? The name of the dude in Dredd who pretty much did that.
Sylvester Stallone.
No, the fucking Aronofsky.
Darren Aronofsky did Dredd.
I'm pretty sure.
No, Alex Garland did Dredd.
Ah, there we go. That's it. I don't know why I was thinking Aronofsky. It's a late night recording.
Yeah, our least favourites. Yeah, cause, well, the director of Dredd was Pete Travis, but Alex Garland's great.
Alex Garland
is
better
than George Cosmatos, I'll tell you that much for free.
But that whole thing is you have someone there that's just like, well, I'll do it if you're not going to give a shit. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I have a vision for this and I'm going to do it. It's probably slightly different when you've got Sylvester Stallone coming on. Because really, this, you've not watched the movie, so I'll kind of go through a little bit of the background of it as well. Cause I assume you might not be familiar, but this movie is based on the book. I don't know if you've ever heard of Fair Game.
No, I haven't. This is Die Hard being based on a book. I don't care.
I don't think most people would have read this book. It did get adapted into another movie. I think it's got Baldwin in it.
Which one?
Billy Baldwin.
No, this is Danny Baldwin. If you want him, phone his extension, stupid. Sorry, I watched South Park the movie the other day. That was a pull for nobody.
So Paula Gosling, she's the author of Fair Game. When this movie actually came out, because Sylvester Stallone based pretty much quite a heavy lot on this book, he then wanted the reissue of the novel, which was going to be sort of like tied in. He wanted himself credited as the author for the book.
Right.
Yeah, can you believe that? And I know we talk about Sylvester Stallone being a bit of a narcissist, but it's like, cut down. Like,
I mean, imagine you can't. Yeah, that's just changing the past, isn't it? That's just like,
it's like that meme, isn't it? Where it's just like, hey, I made this, and it gives it over to somebody, and it's like, oh, I made this.
Like that. Was it? Wait, which one was it? Was it Edison or Einstein that worked at the patent office?
Edison.
Yeah. That motherfucker. Yeah,
definitely Einstein.
Okay, so Sylvester Stallone tried to take this off of Ryan Gosling's mum. Cool.
So, yeah. So if you're not too familiar with Sylvester Stallone's work as well, obviously, big screenwriter, but, you know, he can write screenplay. He does a lot of writing, especially when it comes to boredom projects.
Mm.
So, Sylvester Stallone was originally signed to play the lead in Beverly Hills Cop.
Oh, in 1994. Well.
Yeah, so he was going to play Axel Foley. Was it Alex? Axel. Now, with this, he did a lot of work on the screenplay, turning into more action-based, you know, taking out all the comedy, put more explosions.
If I didn't put a banana in the tailpipe, but I put a grenade up there?
Exactly. And with that, the studio, when they were starting to read through, were like, we can't afford this, you know, this, you wanting to do the fucking Expendables, essentially. Yeah. So he eventually left.
Sorry, I'm just doing Eddie Murphy's bits from Beverly Hills Cop as Sylvester Stallone. I came here to write about Michael Jackson, but now you're telling me I'm Italian American and can't do it? It would have been a different but also equally better potentially movie.
I feel like we're getting Stop or My Mum Will Shoot vibes.
Yeah. Oh no, that movie.
Yeah, so when he left, he took that draft of script with him and channeled it into this movie. So the problem is with this, though, is that because the studio didn't have a lot of faith, even though they put a bit of money into this movie, they massively cut it. So the original rough cut of this movie is like over 2 hours
long.
Okay,
oh dear. Right.
So then they cut it from 2 hours to 87 minutes.
Right.
Okay, so it's a big chunk missing out of here.
That's a quarter of the movie.
Yeah, exactly. Right, so thereby increasing the number of screenings per day for the movie when it got released.
I'm going to take a stab
and
say they cut out gratuitous sex.
Yes.
And
the violence.
And yeah, gratuitous violence. God damn it.
So they obviously trying to avoid the X rating, trying to, you know, get that sweet PG-13.
Yeah.
But then because of that, the movie has a lot of plot holes and doesn't make too much sense. Wait. It's very much a don't ask questions.
They took out 25% of a movie and there are plot holes. I can't believe it.
Can you believe it? So, the film was considered a bit of a box office disappointment at the time, especially compared to Rambo. So Rambo Blood Part 2 is 1985, and Rocky 4 is 1985 as well. So, you know, you're comparing the movies to that, you know, fucking Rocky 4 is like one of the fucking best Rockies out there.
Alright, we're going to have a... You know how we did like an Alien versus Predator thing once? We're going to have a Rocky chat, because so far you've said some crazy things today. Number one is that Rocky 5 is a good movie.
Rocky 5, I didn't say it's good. I said it's part of the collection and it's watchable. It's definitely up there, especially the end fight scene.
Yeah, which I got to admit, I watched Balboa the other day. That is the worst part of that one.
Oh, yeah, the whole, like, ESPN, like, sort of, like, live video.
But also, for some reason, we're cutting to blue. We're fading to blue, and I didn't get it. I just didn't get it. But the rest of the film's awesome.
Yeah, it's... Again, this is where I would always say, like, I think Stallone sometimes gets slammed for things like this, but, yeah, at the same time, he that guy can fucking write.
He can. Who else is in this film?
Well, yeah, so we've just saying there that this is obviously Sylvester Stallone, huge vehicle for him, and very much a self-insert character. This is very much between Rocky IV and Over the Top, which is 1987, so sandwiched in the middle of that. So we're having a bit of a drop-off.
Real swing and a miss. Over the Top, hang on, wait. Because I was
Over the Top's confused. The arm
yeah, right.
One.
Over the Top's the arm wrestling one. Rhinestone Cowboy is the Dolly Parton one?
I want to say so.
Something like that. Either way, goddamn.
So Bridget Nielsen's in this. She plays Ingrid. Obviously, if you're familiar with Bridget Nielsen, you probably know her from Red Sonja. Also Beverly Hills Cop 2, funnily enough.
And also being Sylvester Stallone's wife?
At this time, yes.
Oh, I wonder how she got the part.
We've got Renny Santoni. He plays Gonzalez. So he's the sort of partner in the zombie squad, is what they call their sort of little unit. Kind of looks like the Doctor from Star Trek Voyager. But he probably, if you had to pick a movie that he was in, it's probably Chico in Dirty Harry.
Oh, okay, I know who we're talking about.
Yeah, there we go. Andrew Robinson, he plays Detective Monty, and he wouldn't be so familiar to you, but definitely to someone who's watched Deep Space Nine, because he's Garrick, the Kardashian shopkeeper.
Okay, Taylor. Of course. No, we all love Garrick. Man, when are we getting that Garrick spin-off Disney Plus show? Or is it Amazon Prime? Who's got Picard? Is it Prime?
Do you know what? Picard Season 3 is... All right.
Is it, or is it just better than the other two?
It's that. Yeah. It's very much. It's not the pile of shit that was season one and season two.
I'm saying this like I've watched any of it. I just remember our conversation from the other day and rehashing it.
That's fair. But you would know Andrew Robinson as he's the killer in Dirty Harry. He's the guy with like the mop hair at the end of the movie.
Sorry, was everyone in this film in both Dirty Harry and fucking Star Trek?
It's also Larry from Hellraiser.
Okay.
Remember that?
Cool. Yeah.
Brian Thompson. He plays a night slasher. Very quite distinct looking. Very, like, he's got some cheekbones on him. Probably best known as the alien bounty hunter from X-Files.
Cool. Okay.
Shao Kahn in the Mortal Kombat Annihilation.
Yeah, I know who we're talking about now.
Yeah, there we go. He was also one of the punks from Terminator 1 next to Bill Paxton. Nice. Yeah. Nice.
The other punk, or punk number two, I guess.
Yeah, this is a strange one. So Brian Thompson's come out about this movie, and he said, so obviously he's the night slasher.
Which I assume is the main villain.
Yeah, it is in a way. It's like, because there's this weird fucking cult sort of subplot, right. And he's the sort of like, you're not too sure if he's like the head honcho, or if he's like the prodigal son sort of kind of thing that's always, whatever, but he's... You know, he's the night slasher, and he's got the big fuck off knife. So he had to buy his own ticket to see the film himself, because he wasn't invited to the film's premiere, and he still doesn't know why. You know, one of those weird things is you're like, why wouldn't he be invited to that?
Okay, we've got to boost ticket sales. Everybody except Stallone buys their own ticket. Even you, Cosmatos.
Well, yeah, and apparently they just never spoke ever since, like, him and Sylvester Stallone.
Did he not ask the question at the premiere? Obviously not.
I don't think... I take it you didn't go to the premiere. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah? I don't know. Madness, I tell you.
A bit of a weird one. Last but not least, you've got Lee Garlington. Just so we have a name to the character of Nancy Stork, who's like kind of like it's like accomplice to the night slasher, but she's a police officer. Shh.
Right. Okay. I can't wait for that pivotal plot twist. I'm sure it's gonna be super layered in the 25% that's been cut out.
So I kind of talked a little bit on the budget. This movie grossed over 12.6 million.
Okay.
So not too bad on an opening weekend. It's actually the largest opening weekend in the history of Warner Brothers at that time and the Cannon Group, and it earned over 160 million worldwide against a budget of 25 million,
and yet it's still a commercial flop.
Apparently, it's that opening weekend was the sixth biggest film in 1986.
I don't understand how the box office, like, it doesn't matter anymore because everything's on streaming. I don't understand how you can look at that. Well, it made 12 million. Fuck. I just don't get it.
Well, it made 12 million only on its opening week. So it earned over 160 million worldwide.
Anything else in the earns $12 million. If you and I woke up tomorrow and were like, all right, we're going to invent something, and within a week, it made $12 million. We'll be like, right, wow, we've got it made in the shade. No one would come along and be like, yeah, but you didn't earn 13. Like, it's madness.
Yeah, I think it's a bit weird, isn't it? Because you're like, well, we've made half our budget back in the first, like, few days. I mean, you kind of think, well, this is going to be in cinemas for a few more weeks. I'm pretty sure we're going to be all right. And I'm not too sure what the percentages are, like, you know, on average, that fall off on a movie after this box office weekend,
the only thing I can assume is if you're making a film that's 25 million, you want to make back that 25 million in the first week. If you haven't, then it's a flop, I guess. Because that was the thing with Scream when it came out in 96 or 97. Anyway, it made like 6 million in week one, but by the end of the month, it made 100 million. So within that first 7 days, flop.
But that's that whole kind of word of mouth, isn't it? It's like, and I think sometimes, you know, you have these movies that like come and it's huge, like big, like weekend, and then everyone actually goes to see the movie, and then everyone's like, fuck, that was shit. And then no one watches it. Or they're like, well, I'll just wait for the streaming coming out. And I think that happens to a lot of the Disney movies now, like especially the Marvel movies.
I think that's where there's going to be a certain kind of backlash against it, is because if you don't know how to, a movie gets lost because if you don't know how to advertise it, and you can only advertise so much on, say, Netflix or Disney, by putting up a thumbnail or saying like, watch this trailer immediately or something. If you don't know how to,
I just find it a bit interesting that you have a studio that has their own streaming service, which is like, do they even give a shit now about box office? You know, in that sense, it's like, Black Panther, Wakanda Forever apparently didn't do as well as they thought it would, and so it went on streaming that little bit quicker. Right. You know, things like that, and you're just like,
Well, based on my dad's review, when this hit home theatres, it doesn't matter about this one. But I am interested to go and sit down and watch it.
Yes, so am I. Let's jump on the couch.
Chair Force One.
It is movie talk time.
All right, so back in the room, and that is an hour 27 minutes that you're never getting back, Craig. Why your first watch?
So, I mean, I said at the top, I've not seen this film. And I have now, at this point, just seen this film. But,
yes,
about a month or two ago, I had previously seen this film. Now, it didn't have Sylvester Stallone in, and it wasn't called Cobra, but it was the exact same goddamn film. And it's called Stone Cold, starring Brian Bosworth. It's
Stone
the
Cold
same movie. Like, don't get me wrong, I think Stone Cold came out in, like, maybe 90 or 91, so after this.
Yeah.
But it's the same film. That film was about Brian Bosworth as John Stone, who gets sent to infiltrate a cult led by Lance Henriksen.
Oh, cool. Well, I'm liking it already.
It's, you know,
we've got time for Henriksen.
Kind of trash, but kind of amazing at the same time. And Mac's dad from Sonny is quite literally flying a helicopter through the streets. Like, they had permission back then to do that sort of stupid shit.
Very cool.
So I was kind of put off by that, because it starts with the same opening of, like, oh, we're in a supermarket and there's a robbery going on and blah, 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 blah. Anyway, this movie was bonkers.
Yeah, so like you can kind of see what I mean by the fact that there's probably, you know, like literally missing. We do hate it when movies kind of tell you everything. But in this movie, I felt it needed it to, like, tell me what the fuck's going on. So I don't quite get, like... And you don't have to always explain everything. Like, you can leave an air of mystery.
No, there needed to be a certain level of exposition that this just didn't have. So, I mean, it starts with the voiceover, as we've kind of talked about, which is, like, a rundown of all the crimes that happen in America on any given second.
Yeah, but that doesn't really lead anything into the movie.
No, it just kind of like, sets up the ethos of, hey, crime exists. Which you might as well...
Yeah, that's
like,
it.
Hey,
it's like... this weird concept, crime. and weirdly opens up with this cult that's in the background of this movie.
Which leads clappers. To nothing.
Yeah, they're just standing around in a fucking, you know, sort of warehouse, clapping their axes.
Clapping their axes together. They've all got two axes. There's like 100 of them. And fucking, what home base sale did well that day? Like, are they being provided with the axes? Have they got? Is it like,
well, this
fight
is the question.
Like,
do you bring your own axes?
First rule of Cult Club: bring your own axes. Yeah. Second rule of
bring
Cult Club:
bring your own axes.
Bring your own axes.
Now, if everyone bringing their own axes, will there be like a shortage of axes? So then you're like, well, I've only got one axe. And you're like, sorry, mate, you can't be in the two axes.
Damn it, Chris, you left the axe at home.
a bit fucking weird, because it's in the background and you're kind of like straight away aware that something's weird fucking axe clappers are going on, and it's never explained.
And it never comes back. At no point are like they're about to murder someone and he, you know, one of the killers, the Night Slasher. Slasher, by the way, not axer, the Night Slasher. Clanging, is he like clang, clang, clang? Because that's like their Manchurian Candidate trigger word for violence. Like, that never happens. It was a cool image that led to nothing.
Yeah, exactly. And so with this, we then cut to the supermarket, and this is where some, you know, Columbine-style fucking weirdo is going around shooting up all the produce in the supermarket. Doesn't shoot anyone.
Nope.
but did you notice that there was a Christmas tree?
Secret Christmas movie. Yes, I absolutely noticed this.
This is Cobra is a Christmas movie.
Yes, it is. Cobra, the film set in LA, yes?
I think so.
Yeah.
I assume it's LA.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things where it's like, it kind of has that slight Miami vibe to it at points as well.
It does. It has a definite Miami vibe. I think it's set in LA because I think they mention LA. I could be wrong on that one, but...
Yeah, because you know those like hump, like, you know the bit in the car chase where they go over like the bridge.
Yeah, that,
pretty
well, that's
sure that's like
San
a really
Francisco.
Famous. I want to say it's somewhere in California.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. This is a West Coast movie through and through. I 100% agree on that with everything except.
But
for...
his apartment is fucking Miami.
His apartment's Miami. Oh yeah, his apartment. We'll get to it. But his accent and the accent of everyone working around him. And the names of everyone working around him are East Coast.
Yes.
And, I mean, his real name's Cabretti.
Marion Cabretti.
Marion Cabretti, I think Cobra was like, hey, don't call me Marion anymore, I'm Cobra.
I think that's meant to be a homage to John Wayne, isn't it? I think John Wayne's real name is Marion something.
Maybe.
That's to say, it's one of those, yeah, maybe. I don't know. It's a fucking, should have done our homework.
Well, I mean, I didn't expect a John Wayne pull from nowhere. Marion John Wayne, fuck's sake, we're in it now. Marion Robert Morrison. Yeah, his real name is Marion Robert Morrison. There you go. But yeah, no, you've got all these cops who kind of come into the scene at different stages who are like, yeah, quintessential bada bing, like more coffee hun kind of East Coast village types. And it just didn't make any sense. But we got this quote unquote cool shopping scene.
Yeah, so what's really weird is like he goes in, he's shoots up like, you know, the bananas and then holds everyone in the back in the sort of like the deli section. Yep. He lets some guy go but then shoots him in the back and all the fucking police arrive. And they're there for like 5 seconds before one of the guys is like,
"We're out of options.
We did, yeah, you know, we don't know what, the, like, we under out of control of this situation." And it's like, dude, A just got there, but B is like fucking 20 fucking 30 of you outside, you know, one guy now. You've pretty much got the situation on lock. Obviously, you've got to start the negotiation part of it. But it's just like no time has developed between the thing of getting there and then being like, oh man, this is fucked up. And
it's just it's very much like, oh dear, this is our first day on the job.
It's like, better call the Cobra.
Best call the Cobra, man. A, license plate, Cobra, sweet. B, belt buckle, Cobra, think so, sweet. Third, Cobra's on the guns, sweet.
Cobra is on the guns, yeah.
Just, I'm telling you now, that kid got beaten up for being called Marion Cobra. He's like, no, I'm going to double down on Kirby Cobra, guys.
That's very much a self-given nickname.
Oh, 100%.
It's like introducing yourself, they call me Cobra, and like, no one calls you Cobra.
Or you do the opposite thing, you're like, hey, I'm Cobretti, whatever you do, don't call me Cobra. Okay, Cobra. That
Thrill House.
Thrill House. He breaks in, and then you just get kind of, I mean, this was the first instance for me of like, more happened than got cut.
I don't know, like, because he gets into the back and he's kind of like, sort of being menacing from the shadow, getting on the tannoy and being like, oh, you're a lousy shot and things like that. You're kind of like, you probably don't want to antagonise a guy with a shotgun who's holding it to some fucking hostage's head. Do you know what I mean? Like, don't want to get this guy pissed off and angry, this fucking nut job.
Yeah.
Who's threatening to blow up.
Yeah, you say that, but that's because you're not the Cobra, man.
This is true, but I do like his comeback when he does get when the guy's like, I'm going to blow up the supermarket, and he's like, go ahead, I don't shop.
Yeah, that was good.
You're like, yeah, all right, okay.
That was cool. I like that. That was quite funny. And then you've got this is like the second famous line, or maybe the famous line, which is, you're the disease and I'm the cure.
Yes. Which is like, I'm pretty sure that's the poster tagline or something like that.
I mean, we need to talk about the poster for a second. The poster of this film is amazing.
Yeah, I think I said this to you beforehand when we were talking about Cobra, like when we were discussing the idea for the episode. And you know, I said this film is a cool movie poster, and that's it. And it's like, the movie poster is cooler than the actual fucking movie.
I 100% agree, because we've got this scene here, which. Like, the disease, I guess, draws his gun and Cobra throws a knife in his chest?
Yes.
Yeah.
Tactical knife.
Tactical knife, which it doesn't have a Cobra on it, but it's still cool. And then he goes outside.
I never understood this bit, because it's like, I put my gun away.
Yeah.
Don't get why. Because you have the gun on him. But if you got the gun on him... But you're quick enough to throw a fucking knife into his chest. Why wouldn't you just keep the gun on him and then just fucking shoot him? Obviously, it's not as cool, but still, you're a little bit like... And then you're throwing a fucking knife into someone. It's like, you've got to be quite accurate with a throwing... Have you ever tried throwing knife?
I have.
You have? Yeah. Do you know how fucking hard it is?
Yeah.
But
it is a lot easier than throwing axes, and that's why Cobra wins.
I do remember going to one of those, it was like we were doing like archery or something like that, and they had they just had like a side area which had like throwing knives, and it was, fucking cool, let's try this. And I remember throwing it, and then like, you know, as hard as I could, and just fucking bouncing and flinging back at me, and I was like,
You've got to work real hard not to be Jake Busey in Starship Troopers with your knife throwing, like.
Yeah, it was more like that, and that's what I always think when I ever see someone do a throwing knife in a movie.
Yeah.
It's like, the probably out of 10 times it just bounces off something or hits him in the hard part of the body and doesn't go through. It's like, fuck.
Well, that's the other thing. You've got to hit him directly in the heart and then predict that it's going to kill them immediately. And then predict that even their like last dying breath, they're not going to pull the trigger. It's a risky... It's a movie move. You don't do that in real life. Unless
it's a movie
you're fucking
James Coburn. But he throws the knife and then pulls out his gun and then blows him away over the fucking like crisp packets or whatever, and it's just like there's a bit when he comes outside and it's all the news reporters are there trying to interview him, and he kind of gets slight crux of almost like the message of the movie a little bit, which is like the reporter says to him, it's like, hey, what was your like justification for killing that guy had rights?
Yeah.
and Sylvester Stallone grabs a reporter and, you know, sort of unveils the dead kids that, you know, yeah. the guy had shot, and says, well, you tell that to his family. And it's a bit
yeah,
like,
which is all across the, that has to be all across the 6 o'clock news, like rogue cop fucking not defecates on body, but what's it called?
I was like, that's a bit disrespectful to the fucking kid's family by fucking, hey, oh, have a look at this dead kid.
Yeah, that's it. That's his in memoriam right here.
But there is a bit of that. There is a bit of like, the question. It's like, all right, because he says, who are you to be judge and executioner? And
yeah.
You're a bit like, yeah, like, because there is a lot of this in this movie where it's just like, I'm just going to fucking kill everyone.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, and that, you know, could there have been a more peaceful resolution? Probably not. You know, the guy had a fucking bomb on him, but it's not Cobra's fault. He got sent in there.
Yeah, like, Cobra's just following orders. He's a company man.
He is. He's very much the company man. So this is where we kind of get a little bit more of Cobra. So this is where he's like, he's driving down Miami.
Yeah.
And he fucking runs into the back of some cunt's car.
Yeah, so is this, and again, I might be jumping around all over the place, but is this where we've got the crazy fucking music video of Bridget Nielsen, or?
Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet. But yeah, we'll definitely fucking touch on that. Cool. But Sylvester Stallone rear ends some, like, cholos in their car.
Yeah.
And they get out, quite rightly, being like, the fuck are you doing? And Sylvester Stallone literally just wants to park in his spot, yeah. essentially.
Yeah. I have just quickly looked. It is LA.
I'm sure it is. Yeah. I'm sure. But he then rips off the guy's fucking shirt and then walks away, leaving his car there.
Oh, man.
And
I was just like, his car needs to be.
How the fuck is your car not getting bricked?
Like, it's got to be bricked. Straight away. Like, fucking the window smashed, they key a dick into the bonnet or something. But then, like, 100%. The next time he sees them, they're just like, hey, it's Cobra!
You're a good citizen.
Some sort of like whatever that. The fuck. And that is it. That is a whatever the fuck moment. But this, we're 5 minutes into this film, so we might have to rattle along. But, my goodness.
But there's just so many of these little eye patch and wooden leg things
and
that
we're about
just kind
to
of
get,
doesn't make sense.
Adam, we are now at the biggest what the fuck moment of this film. This film that is about like a murderous cult, which we'll get to, and a
Are you talking maybe about the fact that Sylvester Stallone cuts a pizza in half with a pair of scissors?
What the fuck?
Yeah, like what a fucking psycho.
What madness is it that. Now, this is my question. Question A, number one.
Mm.
That piece has been in the fridge.
It is in the fridge.
That's a cold pizza.
It's a cold pizza.
Why would
But if you look at the size of the slice in the box, it looks like a slice box, as in, i.e. There's only enough room in there for the one slice
of
pizza.
Again, I'm okay with, but why didn't he go home and pick up a fresh slice?
But this is what I'm saying. It's like, have you just bought a slice pizza stuck in the fridge so it's cold?
Oh my god, yeah, of course. And then when it's cold, yeah, you're slicing off the crust. Not even the crust, you're slicing halfway through the middle and tucking into it whilst watching the exposition, I mean the news.
Mm.
The news.
But it's also, the egg carton was in the fridge as well.
Which is his gun cleaning kit.
Yeah. And he's just like, but why would you keep that in
so
there?
This is his whole thing. This is like a character trait he has.
Why would you keep lubricant in a cold story?
But no, this is like a character trait he has, which is like, with his partner, he says things like, essentially, oh, you've got to eat healthier. Stop eating that.
Oh, chicken. Yeah, he does. So, yeah, you have too much sugar. It makes you violent.
Bah, 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 bah. And it's like, oh, okay, we get it. You're Sylvester Stallone, you're jacked, and here's how we explain it.
He doesn't really ever get his top off in this movie, does
no,
he?
No, he doesn't, which...
He's the everyday man.
I'm just an everyday cop. I nearly did the accent again, I'm sorry. But yeah, so he's cleaning his gun, he's eating his nothing pizza, and the news is like, oh, there's a cult, There's
like 16 people that have been murdered in the last two days.
They mentioned that there's a night slasher, and the night slasher has no motive or no modus operandi. They'll kill anyone. Like, they killed this banker, and they killed this woman.
There's no pattern.
There's no pattern, which is like the prime joy of a serial killer is, not leaving a trace. And Stallone's the only person that's there, like, oh, it's more than one.
But you say this, but they've allocated all these murders to the same guy, so there must be.
Well, I assume it's the style of killing that's the same. But there's like Jack the Ripper went for prostitutes, that sort of thing.
Hmm.
There's no, oh, I'm going for you because of this reason from her past. It's just, we're going to kill people. Which is what they say on the news. That is not what the movie tells us.
Yeah, it tends to go for, like, more women.
Yeah, typically it tends to go for busty women. Who was the last person we killed? Well, it was a busty woman. You know what we should kill next time? A busty woman.
Yeah, no, you're right.
And if at any point you just had one random scene where it's just, like, Hans Moleman getting killed, I'd be like, okay, movie. You're killing anyone because that sweet little old man didn't deserve to die. I get it. But that wouldn't be a busty woman.
Yeah, because there is a quick scene where they showed the slasher murdering some woman. And then with that...
Busty woman.
And then the next bit is all of the cops in the morgue, which I don't really understand because Sylvester Stallone's there. He's not on the case. He's got nothing to do with the case. And you've got, like, the captain and his sidekick dude, Garrick. And
they all fucking hate Stallone.
Yeah, they're like, it's just such a weird thing. It's like, right, you're not involved in the case and you're in the morgue with this dead body. And it's just like, and it's like, oh, you aren't even on the case.
Yeah, but Adam.
But I want to be on the case.
But Adam, what you've got to remember is that it's a busty woman.
It is, but the weird thing is the morgue is like in the police station, and then they literally walk 2 feet out to where the captain's office
is. Oh goddamn!
Yeah. And right across the captain's office is the fucking shooting range.
Yeah,
and it's all like glass, and it's like, it's like, what the fuck is this police station?
Yeah, this again, this sniffed of we just cut that scene, that sort of thing.
Well, it sniffed a bit of that, but it's also maybe like budgetary, like. You're thinking this is meant to be, you know, you think of Last Action Hero, like the LA police headquarters is like this, it's super altered, like futuristic place.
Or even Demolition Man or RoboCop. Like there's almost like a floor pan you can see to it all. It's grounded. This was not.
Mm. Yeah, it's just like, I just like the fact that you can, while you're on duty, just walk into a shooting range and just start popping off a couple of shots.
Well, it was the 80s.
Like a desk pop.
So he then gets the case, because the captain changes his mind.
Kind of, yeah. It's a bit weird, because I think there's a killing on the underpassage first.
Yeah.
So this is where...
Oh, God, of a busty woman, yeah.
Of a busty woman. And this is where you kind of see how they do it. You know, they kind of coerce people into, you know... when I say, like, a change in direction, what am I looking for? Sleight of hand, misdirection.
Yeah, okay, so what they do is they rear-end someone's car.
Yeah.
And make them get out.
Like, oh, I'm sorry.
And then we're stood next to your car. And we have axes.
Yes.
To which the answer is, well, I'm just going to accelerate then.
Well, yeah, there is a bit of that. Sometimes I think, you know, you never know what you're going to do in those kind of situations. But, unfortunately, she gets murdered. But this is just at the same time that Bridget Nielsen's character is driving past what's going on. But she actually never sees anything.
She doesn't, Adam.
So she sees the Night Slasher, but she doesn't know it's the Night Slasher. And he looks a bit fucking mental anyway. Yep. So she does the right thing and just drives off.
Yeah, and they decide to chase her because, of course,
she's a busty woman. Well, they all assume that she's seen what's happened. But when she relays to the police in an interview, and it's like, so what did you see? Well, and it wasn't even like, oh, this is what happened. I think it was this. It was just like... this happens a little bit after, like, they finally catch up with her, but she says, I was driving past the on the underpass, and it's like, oh, what time? 10. Oh, what did you see? Oh, nothing. There was a guy, I think he broke down or something like that, and he came to approach my car, but he just kind of scared me, so I drove off.
Yeah.
And he like...
At which point, right. Stork, who's the double agent that meant nothing to the plot...
Yes.
She should have been like, case closed.
But that's the thing. She isn't. She, if anything, she... goes to the Night Stalker and be like, she's going to ruin all our plans.
Yeah.
What plans?
Yeah, well, exactly. What
the plan?
Plan
is to kill apparently people. Just to kill random as many fucking people as possible for this New World Order fucking thing. Like, yeah, like the plan for these people is just to murder people. Right. And you kind of get this speech at the end by the Night Slasher when they're having their final showdown where he's like, yeah, we're just going to take out the weak, so only the strong survive sort of thing. And you're like, okay, well, that's your fucking mental plan.
And of course, as we know, busty women are weak.
Well, they make me weak.
Cobra.
So, yeah, you're right. Stork's kind of looking through the blinds like Shifty Eye Dog.
Oh, yeah, if you had to, like... All right, Cobra, someone on the inside... You believe someone on the inside is working for the Night Stalker, or the Night Slasher, whatever he's called. How are you going to know who it is? All right, Captain, well, I'll just check the CCTV. Oh, it's her. It's definitely her. It's definitely the shifty-ass woman staring at our victim through the blinds. Like, she doesn't even work on this floor.
But she would, but because she gets information, she'd be privy to the fact knowing that they know nothing about these fucking people, knowing nothing about like what's, you know, what's happening. It just really fell through for me at that point. Where I was a bit like, wait, why? Because they literally from that point on, they put every single resource into tracking down Bridget Nielsen's character.
Yeah.
And you never really understand why they give a shit that much.
No. There's no...
Oh, someone saw us murder someone. All right. Okay.
There's no
well,
huge
we're murdering everyone.
Reason to it. It's just cool. And so...
Yeah.
Right, thing number one that happens is they try and attack her when she comes out of the elevator.
So she's... Now, so this is the... So now Cobra has been given the green light by the captain and Garrick. And they're like, right, you go do your thing. And then there's this fucking weird montage.
Oh, God, here it is. This is it. This is the weirdest part of the film.
So the fucking photo shoot, the modelling photo shoot with the robots that Bridget Nielsen's... So she's obviously some sort of, like, you know, Playboy model or whatever. And Cobra's sort of, like, turning over the streets, you know, like every nook and cranny. You know all the weirdos and sickos in here. Go find me someone. Take care of it.
Yeah.
And then, but you also then have very small flashes of the Night Stalker, and he's just like sort of like rubbing himself with his knife.
Yeah, which like, I've got to admit, cool knife.
It's a pretty cool knife. Very distinct.
It is. It was. I can imagine the knife being the star of the film, to be honest.
I get what you mean by
it's,
that.
It's just really distinct. I've never seen anything like it before or since. As in like since 1987, not since an hour ago when I watched it. But no, it was pretty damn scary. The rest of the film wasn't.
And you do get to see a little flashes of like how fucking vicious these killers are, because you're right, you know, Bridget Nielsen gets out the elevator, she walks into a car where that guy's trying to proposition her. I mean, hey, baby, like, don't you want to be a star?
Yeah.
And then the security guard, who's probably like on his like 2 days away from retirement, notices that she's left her bag, and like runs after her and is like, "Hey, here's your bag." While she's being chased away by murderers, and he gets out his gun, and I actually think it looks really fucking cool. Actually, the way that the Night Slasher drives into the elevator and kills
that was awesome. That was a really cool. That was like, oh Jesus, death.
That was really kind of like, you know, when we've kind of shit on like stunts, like any kind of like mannequin, so you know the obvious ones were Broken Arrow and then Commando.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, where there's that like really rough jump cut to, you know, to obviously take out the stuntman or the actor and put a dummy in. I didn't fucking see it.
It was
very very impactful. I was like, fucking hell. And but he's got like minions with him, he's got people with fucking axes, so everyone is trying to fucking kill people with the axe.
Yeah.
So that's your thing. She does get away.
Yeah.
And then it's just this weird kind of like, well, this is where you get like, you know, she gets caught up with Cobra and all that sort of shit. But then, you know, this is where kind of like the movie just kind of, it's already falling apart for me anyway, but...
Oh yeah, it's a leaky cauldron, this one.
Yeah, so, because this is where they're going to try and protect her now. So the Night Slasher now puts all the fucking black shit, like boot polish in his hair, tracks it down to the hospital.
Yes, oh god damn it, right, yeah. And we get like almost the worst scene from any Halloween movie ever.
Yeah, kind of like a very, very Michael Myers, kind of like roaming the hallways, hiding in the cupboard sort of thing, and then does the old, like Stanley Kubrick Shining, knife through the door.
Yeah. She locks herself, right, okay, so the Night Stalker walks in and is like, mm-hmm. he says a line of like...
Oh, nice hair. Nice or something hair, like that.
Yeah, bad. And then he starts stabbing hair. The bed. Which but is pillows.
There is no nice hair or pretty hair, though, because there's nothing in
but
the bed.
But there's pillows, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Which she must have put there.
I don't know.
Because like, why else would there be just... pillows placed in that? What, unless she was, like, planning on, I don't know, sneaking out the window on a bedsheet, a rope made of bedsheets, you know?
I don't know, man. Sometimes you like to spoon a pillow.
Yeah, all right, fair enough, all right. To me, we had a scene of her... like putting the pillows there because she knew the Night Stalker was coming, but it would be nice if we had a better action scene. It's something like that. And so this stupid scene got written where she just forgets to unlock a door.
Yeah, but she comes out and she's surprised that he's there. So it wasn't like she was laying a trap or, you know, like trying to create a diversion or distraction.
No, but it feels like
it could have been, and it might have been at some point.
This way works better. That doesn't really work.
Yeah.
It works better.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Yeah.
So this is where you kind of have that, this really weird, like, the conflict that goes on between Garrick and Cobra and the officer. They're trying to talk about what's the safest way to get her. No, she should be taken upstate. No, she should stay in the city. And it's just that really weird, I don't want to hear it, McBain. Kind of, like, type captain, yeah. You know. We go by the book.
Bible.
And you're just having that weird, like, conflict where you're kind of like, you're all meant to be on the same side. Yeah, this guy is really, undermining you. It's probably the best way I could say it. Now, you might not be privy to this, but, and obviously things were cut out. But in the original ending of this movie, Garrick, the sort of, like, the assistant... you know, deputy, captain, whatever the fuck you want to call him. He's meant to be, like, the leader of the cult.
Yeah.
Or he's meant to be, like, head honcho. So at the end of the movie, where Stallone punches him, and we'll definitely touch on that, he rips open his shirt, and there's meant to be the big tattoo of the two axes and the skull on his chest.
Okay.
And you're like, oh, it's you.
It was him the whole time, which wouldn't have worked.
But you kind of, because there are things like how Stork, you know, the insider, she gets put onto the task force.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? She's like, so you're like, how did she get put onto the case as well? And she's just meant to be some fucking beat cop or something like that.
Yeah.
So you're like, there must be someone who's a little bit above and, you know, manipulating, pulling the strings a little bit and all that shit.
Yeah, which again would have been nice, I suppose, if it was... I don't know, better. I want to say better.
Better, if it is better. Yeah. The chase scene happens, that's pretty cool.
And this is it. So many scenes kind of just happen. So, like, they're driving out of town because, of course, it's safer to just protect someone where you don't know how to protect them, I guess.
Yeah.
And then, like, his buddy and Stork get taken out. Cool, I guess.
Mm.
And then we've just got this... random ass, and it is almost like Simpsons-esque, and I know we always do the Simpsons, but like it's this Simpsons-esque car chase where it's like close up the wheels,
he's gaining on us, it's a Geo.
It's a Geo. But also in Who Shot Mr. Burns Part 2, when Smithers wakes up and Mr. Burns is like, let's burn rubber, baby, and you cut to Monty and Smithers in the car riding around the tracks firing the shotgun, it's that moment. It's exactly that moment stretched out for, I want to say, 15 minutes.
There was a really interesting video I watched about screenwriting, and it had Trey Stone and Matt Parker on it. I don't know if you've seen this video.
No.
They go into like some sort of college or university lecture, and they're like, so this is how you write a movie, or this is how we write episodes. And this is one scene that clicked for us and how we stopped making like shit and how we actually started really writing. And, you know, and it was, if you have a scene or your story points and include, and then this happens, and then this happens, then your story doesn't make sense. It should be because, like, this scene happens, therefore this scene happens.
Right, yeah.
But this happens, therefore this happens.
Yeah.
And you're like, hey, that's really interesting. And it really actually opened my eyes to watching movies, because you are a little bit right. What's the next step of the plot, and how does that evolve? And it's like, what are the actions and consequences? So in every scene, there's an action, but then there'll be a consequence that leads on to the next scene, or how it should be. But this movie feels very much like, right, okay, well, we're driving out, and then suddenly we're attacked by a car when it's got like the fucking night slasher in it, and then I'm going to have my Uzi, and I'm going to shoot a car, and it's going to blow up, and it's going to look really fucking cool, and then I'm going to drive like chasing this car, even though I've got the fucking person I'm trying to protect in the car from this person I'm chasing.
Yeah, or something, and that's then, like, okay, let's tie into Sylvester Stallone is leaving the city with Bridget Nielsen, and because of his actions earlier with the Latin gang, they chase him, and because of that, she thinks that Cobra can't protect her, but little does she know that the Night Stalkers are also following, and they're the real threat, and therefore this bigger chase happens. But instead, it's just like close up of wheel, close up of gun, close up of wheel, close up of car flipping. I think at one point, doesn't he do the James Bond man with a golden gun whoop, car?
It pretty much does at the end and fucking tails
it. Yeah, which, you know, great way to keep the hostage safe, or the witness safe, even.
Yeah, exactly. The hostage. But the fact that he kind of gets out and like brushes himself off.
Oh, it's so
80s. it's just like fucking, yeah, I'll fucking just literally barrel roll my car through a fucking boat. I'll be all right.
Marion Wilson or whatever. I'm fine. Marion Cobra.
But he kind of, it's in that weird way, like, all of this has happened. So, like, they're going after this woman. But why are they so, I still don't understand why they're so fucking dead set. Because the guy is walking around like killing fucking doctors and nurses in the fucking hospital like he doesn't give a fuck. You know what I mean? It's just like,
it doesn't make a sense.
Yeah. I do feel though, the female cop, Stork, she needed way more dialogue or anything in this, because the bit I don't really understand is she's been put into the on patrol with Cobra and the other and Chico, and there's a weird line when they were like, oh, she, like, when they find out she's a turncoat, they're like, oh,
I never trusted that bitch.
I never trusted it. But it's like, but there was literally no, that you, I don't think you even spoke a fucking word to her.
No, they,
like,
didn't.
She was just a nobody. She was like a proper NPC.
She really was. And at one point, like, Cobra catches, because they hold up in a motel, because the fun, like, the second, there are basically three scenes of this movie, which is something we say quite a lot. The third scene of this movie is the motel, almost Universal Soldier-esque motel scene.
Good chance. Yeah. Yeah.
Where they hold up and they're like, oh, we'll be safe here for the night. And Chico's like, oh, ask him his name. and it's Marion. And then, okay, cool. I guess you guys are in love now, because he told you his secret name, I guess, or something. And Sylvester Stallone finds Stork on the phone and does nothing with it. Does no, like, Star 69, I'll fucking ring that number again.
It feels like suspicions have been raised, but I'm not going to act on it.
Yeah, and then fucking we get the ending of the Wild Bunch and the Magnificent Seven the following morning, because all of the cult turn up and so few of them are carrying axes.
Well, it's just a bit fucking weird, because it's like, you know that bit in Anchorman where they're walking through the street and Vince Vaughn rocks up, but they're on their bikes and they start circling.
Oh, that bit. I thought you were talking about the big fight with all of the channels.
Oh, but I think it kind of...
Oh, actually, like, no, you're right. It does lead into that. Yeah, yeah.
But that's as intimidating as it is. It's just like, you know, the bigger kids have turned up on their bikes starting to circle you. You know what I mean? And, you know, when they look out and then, yeah, people are literally just driving around in circles. And you're like, but what are you doing?
It's like, almost like they're trying to circle wagons. But in doing so, they're just allowing Sylvester Stallone or Cobra and Chico, I guess, to fire shots at them.
Yeah, it's like fish in a barrel. It's like, hey, come right for me. Like, bam. Like, just shooting the guy who was driving. And he's like, all right, well, that's that guy dead. And then so he was no threat.
Zero threat whatsoever. And, like, I don't know. Chico gets shot and Sylvester Stallone's like, yeah, leave him. With a zombie squad.
Yeah, fuck. And it's like, yeah, every man for himself.
Absolutely. But then does Bridget Nielsen get kidnapped?
No, they jump into the truck.
Oh, that's right. And yeah, it becomes...
Even though there's like a guy flying through the door on his fucking motorbike, they've obviously got enough time to fucking escape. And it's just such a... Oh, because we're not even touched on it, because I think this movie is just so fucking forgettable. And they had like that weird like montage with the sniper.
Which, what the hell?
And they're kind of like, he did fuck all. Oh, like, he's just like... I thought it kind of building up that he's meant to be some maybe badass sniper, and then he gets the scope on Stallone at one point, and then
blows it.
Doesn't do anything.
Absolutely, like, merit. Well, that's 10 of our 20.
I watched him get in the truck. Ah, oh, fuck! If only I could stop him somehow.
If only I had a long range weapon. Oh, wait a minute.
And then they do some weird, like Mad Max-esque, Road Warrior type fight where he's standing on the car, just mowing down people.
Yeah, this kind of reminded me, and I know, like, this is now, I'm talking about a movie within a movie, but it reminded me of DiCaprio in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood with the, I think it's the episode of FBI that he's in that, where he comes on the back of a pickup truck and starts blasting a shotgun at someone, something like that. And that, that movie, that one snippet, or that episode, scene of that TV show that's in that movie is awesome. In this, it was like, dude, you're gonna die.
Yeah, so they all run off and they're all on dirt bikes and they end up fucking, like, you know, pretty much killing everyone, and they kind of get into like the Terminator 2 metal factory.
Yeah.
And this is where you like Stork kind of, I think she does get shot, killed, and then you have like the final showdown with the Night Slasher. I'm just trying to get to the end here.
But this is it. So is the movie, and we know that because they're cutting out 25%. They're just like, all right, just get to the end. Just get to 87 minutes, and we'll put asses in seats and make our money back.
Yeah, so this is where it like turns. You know, when I was saying that the kind of crux, the message, if there ever was one for this movie, was, you know, that reporter was saying, hey, you know, these people have rights and all that sort of shit. The Night Slasher kind of gives his monologue, and he's just like, yeah, I'm going to kill the fucking weak. But it's like, basically, like, yeah, you can't kill me, I have rights. But kind of does his, what's his fucking name? What the fuck his name? Robocop.
Like the actual Murphy?
No, what's his name? Bald Ed's dad.
Yeah. Oh, man, what's his name? Hold on. Oh, no. Gonna have to Google it. We will edit around this.
Kurtwood Smith.
Yeah, Kurtwood Smith. Okay,
fucking dug that out. Oh, dab. Kurtwood Smith. You know where he's having that kind of, like, same fucking rant?
Yeah.
But did he not just see that I've killed about, like, 50 people on the way? I'm not the guy that gives a fuck about rights. That would have been the worst kind of, you know, when that has happened before, where, you know, the hero's gone in and has literally murdered like 20 henchmen.
Yeah.
but then like showing mercy to like the main villain, you know, to for some sort of weird character arc or, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
Some moral.
Some reason like, to add, does it make him likable, I guess? Is it one less kill? Right. But again, it's the whole thing, like we're cutting out the kills. In an action movie, we're cutting out the kills.
About killing. Yeah, you know, cutting out killing in a movie about killing people.
Yeah, exactly. It's crazy.
So yeah, so they have their as I said, their Terminator 2 fight, and I do feel like when the Night Slasher is put onto the hook and starts screaming, that was actually quite fucking, like, his, like, screaming, you know, obviously he's acting, but it's quite, like, howling. It's just like, oh my god, that guy's, like, screaming for his fucking life and then being thrown into a furnace on a hook very, very slowly.
Yeah, it was very Texas Chainsaw.
Definitely.
In the sense of, like, you don't see the hook, you just kind of see the reaction, you do it all in your own head.
If you combine the Austin Powell steamroller with Texas Chainsaw Massacre...
Move! You'd get bloody move!
No! But yeah, so that's pretty much it.
We've got to mention the line. This is where the law stops and I start.
Oh yeah, let off some steam.
Fuck you, asshole. Fuck you, asshole. No, that was the line that was in the Tango and Cash fucking VHS that I watched. And that's the reason I know about this film. I gotta say, it wasn't worth getting to. The whole film, I was like, alright, when does he say like the step into Act 2? That's the moment of like, oh, I need to get revenge. Or something. And that's always what I thought it is. Like, that's the moment in the movie where he gets drawn into the violence. It's not the final line. What the hell?
Yeah, so you have all this, like, this big crescendo ending, and then you have the trying to tie it all up at the end where Cobra's got the girl and he has it out with the captain.
Yeah.
Garrick offers his an apology. He says, hey, look, let's bygones, here's my hand, I'll be the begging man to say that, admit that I'm wrong, you know what I mean, like, about your methods and where you get some. And it's like, and then Sylvester Stallone shakes his hand and kind of like then like sucker punches him. Yeah, you know I mean, it's just like the guy's obviously not expecting a fight or a punch, and it's just like proper like straight in the fucking kisser.
Oh yeah, and it's straight up power at the kisser, and it's straight up like congratulations, you've lost your job.
But it's just like you just punched a fucking like a senior officer.
He's Gary Busey in Point Break.
This is it, but no one gives a shit. No. Like, oh, you just assaulted someone. Like, we're all cops, and not only that, the fucking captain turns around. And it's like, hey, Cobra, do you want a lift? It's like, I know you just literally punched my subordinate out, but I don't give a fuck.
We never liked Garrick anyway.
Yeah, fuck that guy. so then they get in the car or the bike or whatever the fuck it was. I feel like it's a motorbike. Yeah. And then you get some weird uplifting music. The movie's music, especially the montages, was so jarring.
Especially look, if there's anyone that knows how to do a montage, it's Sylvester Stallone, which makes it even weirder that it's so bad.
I feel like one of the montages, because do you ever watch the Transformer movie?
I've seen some of them.
Do you know the song The Touch by Stan Bush?
You got the touch.
You got the power.
Yes.
Bow, 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 bow. And a fucking awesome tune. That was originally written for this movie.
Okay, cool.
And I feel that in one of those montages, that song would have been playing, which makes you then think, how? Like, where would that fucking song fit in the movie?
Yeah. Right at the end, when he like high fives the captain after punching out Garrick. Or actually, you know what would be better? If that you get a scene, right? William Sadler, beginning of Die Hard 2, Tai Chi naked, right?
Right, okay, yeah.
Mix that with Keanu Reeves in The Watcher listening to, I think, Rob Zombie's Dig Through the Bitches and Brrr, through Dracula. Yeah,
Dracula, yeah.
So you get naked Mike Stalker dancing to You Got the Touch, You Got the Power, whilst like licking his knife and looking at his next victim. I'd be like, all right, I now know everything about this movie. All the raccoons
run with us. They sound really weirdly upbeat.
Yes.
You can run with us. We got everything you need.
Or, you know, if I can take a song that's from like a classic, say, 80s movie, like Don't You Forget About Me by The Breakfast Club. Basically, do to a song like that what Reservoir Dogs did to Stuck in the Middle with You. So that it's just like, yeah, right.
Probably like the was it the Buffalo Bill in fucking Silence of the Lambs?
Yeah. Would you fuck me?
Anyway, like I feel like we're talking about any other movie right now because we would rather talk about any other movie than this fucking piece of shit. More
insane, because that's what it needed. It needed that 25%, and I think if it had it, it would be awesome. But as it stands, this film was dull, which you don't want from an 80s Stallone movie.
I agree with you on that. Like, if this, you know, there's nothing more offensive in movies and media by being boring, it's like being unintentionally boring, because you know you can have long drawn out scenes and create tension and where nothing really happens but dialogue, and it's just like if it builds to something, or if fantastic.
It's really good dialogue. I mean, look at Glengarry Glen Ross or 12 Angry Men. It's nothing but dialogue, and it's awesome. But if you're just like, oh, I'm slicing, it's gotta be engaging. Isn't that cool and weird? And watching exposition news isn't that interesting? Whilst cleaning my gun, aren't I so dedicated to the gist? That bullshit. It was.
I would be interested to see if there was some sort of. I don't think there is, like a director's cut where they've added in the. I think that might be a lie. I think there's some sort of bootleg copy out there.
I've just read that there's a version online or somewhere which has the extra 30 to 40 minutes. And I bet that movie fucking rules. I bet that movie just goes, yeah, we're just going to do everything.
I bet it doesn't.
We're turning up to 11. We're going to fill these plot holes.
I bet, because it has all of this movie in it plus.
Yeah, maybe it could suck. But no, I gotta say, I didn't enjoy this as a. It is not a guilty pleasure. This is not a guilty pleasure. But
no, and that was the thing, because I think it was interesting to touch on a movie that, hey, you know, and this comes into almost like slight danger. Back in the day, when you would walk into a video rental store. And I always think to myself, I used to see this movie on the shelves all the time, and I'm pretty sure they had the poster of this movie in the video shop. And it'd be like, well, that looks cool. That's got Sylvester Stallone in it. Why wouldn't I want to fucking rent that? I like all his movies. And that's how to get you. You know, you spend your £2 buying your fucking...
Yeah.
Your VHS for the weekend, and then you're like, ah, I got fucking done.
But what I will say is there are certain scenes in this that I was like, I'm going to have fun talking about this with my, not just yourself, but with my other like cinephile nerd friends for the rest of my life. Be like,
but I feel like someone out there's probably cut this movie into a compilation of like the best bits of Cobra on YouTube, and it'll be like 4 minutes
long. Yeah, that's the other thing as well. 5%.
These are all the lines. This is all the cool shit that happens, and then you're like, great, that's what I could have watched. That
Overall, not great, wouldn't recommend, but at the same time I'm glad it's off my bucket list now.
There you go, that's it. It's like, I've seen Cobra.
Alright, well, this has been the Admin Craig's Guilty Pleasure Simple Podcast. That was our episode on Cobra, 1986's Cobra, not that 2000 and whatever Sky TV show. Anyway, we are on Instagram, we are on Facebook, we are on Twitter, Admin Craig's Guilty Pleasure Cinema Podcast. We are on Spotify, we are on iTunes, we are all other major streaming apps. If you like what you heard, give us a like, give us a subscribe, give us a share, give us a follow, tell a friend. And as always, we will be back next week with God knows what, but coming soon.
Also, check out Liaison on Apple TV.
Okay.
If you want to see an appearance by Craig, I know one of them is episode 2, 20 minutes, 10 seconds in.
That's some knowledge. Most people don't have Apple TV, so no one's ever going to see it. But I had great fun playing a police officer and several other roles during that production.
So with that, we, as much as we've taken a bit of a break, and that was literally because of work commitments, as in Craig more than me, and... We will try and get as much content done over the next couple of days and weeks so we can have a little bit of
Oh, pads. Yeah, it's all coming your way soon. We've got a special episode we're recording at some point, which is going to be our new segment called The Friday Night In. We will be putting stuff
yes, we're gonna get that going.
On Patreon so we can take your money. But until then, he has been Adam, I've been Craig, this has been Cobra, and as always, my friend, it's been a pleasure.
It has been a pleasure.
See you next time.
We are watching a movie that we are talking about. So sit back and relax, and it's time to talk about it. Talk about it. Maybe get some popcorn, or maybe some snacks, because we are watching a movie that we're gonna be a talking about.
Hey, let's never do Cobra twice again.
Well,
yeah,
don't
you don't remember
about
us doing this before and you losing the corrupted files?
Oh, I'll stop recording now.
It is movie talk time.